This is Stories Worth Sharing from the Church of England.
For some people, poetry is exhilarating, while for others it's baffling. In a new book titled The Splash of Words, the Reverend Canon Mark Oakley uses selected poems to invite everyone to explore the power of poetry, and why it's particularly important for people of faith to engage with it. First of all, Mark, why did you call your new book The Splash of Words?
Well, I suppose I think of a poem as similar to throwing a stone into a pond. There's that initial splash, that shock, when you first hear the words and you're sort of silenced by the impact. And then the work of the poem begins and the ripples start to head out towards your shore, as it were. And as they wash over your shore, you know, the sand shift, the stones are moved a bit, you feel as if there's a bit of turbulence. But it seemed to me a good image for a poem. A good poem should have that splash and then the ripples and then the effect in your life. I don't think a poem is there just as entertainment. I think it's about good business.
You say in the book that poetry is a soul language. Can you say a bit more about that?
Yes. I suppose I believe that God's given us all a great gift, and it's called our being. And we're asked to give one gift back in return, and it's called our becoming. It's who we become in our life. And therefore, spirituality for me is about development and about growth and about formation. And therefore, if we're going to speak about it and have a language that helps us grow, we need a language that can adapt and shape and provoke. And that for me is poetic language. And therefore, I think spiritual language, theological language, is not ultimately about information. It's about formation. It's about human formation. And therefore, we do need a language that's often tricky and difficult, because those are often the important times in a life and in understanding. We need difficulty, something that we try to avoid, I think, in quick clarity all the time and a Google answer to everything. But actually, the spiritual adventure involves some dislocation and some provocation. And here's a language, it seems to me, that does exactly that. And at the end of the day, it seems to me that poetry is a language that distills. We feel that in this difficulty, this is language, but not as we know it. But we feel as if we're getting a little bit nearer a purer truth. And, you know, therefore, it doesn't surprise me that most of the world's religions have expressed their beliefs poetically.
But when people are going through difficult times, why would they want to turn to something which is going to be potentially provocative?
Yes. Well, of course, there's a lot of bad poems as well. but I think a good poem, you shouldn't be able to predict what's coming next. There should be an element of surprise that both feels new and yet somehow at home in you. This is the amazing thing about a good poem. You have the recognition that you didn't know you had. So, yes, when you're bereaved, and for instance, it doesn't surprise me that at funerals people want poems, because they are expressing emotions and feelings which actually we can't be prosaic about. They're far too deep and complex. We need a language that is deep and complex to do justice to those feelings. So, yes, at the birth of a child, at a commitment of love, here is a language form that does some justice to our complexity and our potential.
You said about poetry having a transformative process. Why in particular poetry as opposed to another art form?
Well, I think other art forms can be transformative. For me, I focus in on poetry because I think that, well, I follow a master, as it were, Jesus, who taught poetically, it seems to me. He was persistently figurative. He didn't give us an instruction manual. He did not give us nice, neat essays. He told stories. And he had a language that always hovered, never quite came into land. People were always running up saying, what did you mean by that? And that seems to me to be very important, because here was a language that was not supposed to make easy sense. It was there to make you. It was to create you, to form you into a disciple at the end of the day. So Jesus, for me, is a poetic teacher, and therefore I focus in on that transformative language that I think he used, and which is what made people sit up and follow him, it seems to me. And I think the church needs a bit more poetry in it today to do the same.
You also write that the messengers of transformation in society require a language that offers poetic hope. So for you, poetry is more than an art form.
Yes, and I often think about people like Martin Luther King, who never once in his life said, you know, I have a nightmare. He said, I have a dream. And what he did to express that and to bring that dream about was to preach with the most poetic power ever. He was not prosaic. So hope, it seems to me, is caught up with a poetic language all the time. Prose can often, you know, be rather prosaic, but poetry inspirits, enlivens, provokes, challenges, makes you slightly dislocated. And therefore, it's prompting you into a new way of being. It's asking you to look beyond the prosaic and to explore a new hope, a new vision. So language like poetry is always stretching, exercising itself, and making us reimagine.
But why would that necessarily lead to a sense of hope, though, as opposed to being provoked to a sense of despair or loss of meaning?
Well, people can use language for despairing reasons, and I think, unfortunately, many are at the moment, playing on our deeper fears. However, I think for the person of faith, what you would want to explore poetry for is a sense that, a bit like the ministry of Jesus, actually, you can spot the hard full stops in a life where a life or a society even has closed down, has stopped, there's some sort of closure, and turn that hard little full stop into a comma. And I think in order for us to see that potential, that new chapter that might open up, that fresh understanding, that reimagined reality, you often need a language that shocks you, that's what I say in the book, interrupts our snoring. And I think that's what poetry is designed to do.
And all this goes some way to answering why it's important to engage with poetry?
Michael Longley, the Irish poet, was once asked, where do you get all this poetry from? You know, what's the origin of all these ideas and expressions that you have? And he said, if I knew where poetry came from, I'd go and live there. And I suppose I, in a very, you know, modest way, are trying to invite people to explore what it might mean, not actually to go and live there, but at least make a journey towards this origin of poetry. I think it's important because I believe that God is in the world as poetry is in the poem, and this is a very important exploration for people of faith. I do also think that people of faith should see language as a sacrament and be very careful with their use of language and also treat it as a rich source of insight of God and of the sacred, in the same way that we, you know, are very careful with our pouring of the water into the font, the placing of the bread and wine on the table. I think we ought to be equally a celebratory and grateful for language, and we're missing enormous richness if we're not.
For those who aren't familiar with poetry, who think it's pretentious or simply have no idea what's going on, what would you say to them?
Well, I suppose I wrote the book for such people who either have horrific memories from school of trying to remember poems, and there's even a name for this, it's called metrophobia. It sounds like fear of the underground. It's fear of poetry. So there is a huge fear about this because of bad memories, but also because people buy a book of poems and they have a go and they think, what the hell's that about? And they give up. So what I do in the book is take about 30 poems and I gently, you know, excavate them and say, well, what is this about? And try and pursue some of the ripples, to go back to that image, that have been set off in me. I don't know whether it will help people. I hope it will. I always say to people, it's not a scholarly book, but it's a very enthusiastic book, because it's something I feel very passionate about. And if I can pass on that enthusiasm to people who haven't quite got it yet, then I think the work will be done.
Do you think it's something everyone can get?
I do, actually. I think there's a strong sense sometimes that it is a little bit elitist. And, you know, we have this idea of, you know, big floppy-hatted, incomprehensible academics. But actually, if you look where poetry is used, whether it's in pop songs, whether it's in graffiti, whether it's rehabilitating prisoners, whether it's, you know, holding the hand of someone in a hospice, poetry is part of the human response to the spiritual adventure of being alive. And whatever forms it takes, whether it's in housing estates or whether it's in a Cambridge college, there it is. And if we don't attend to it properly, I really do think we're missing something pretty vital.
But as you said earlier, it's also part of poetry to be puzzling.
Knowing that a lot of people find it a bit difficult to begin reading a poem, and I often say to people, when you buy a book of poems, you're not getting many words for your money, but you are getting more meaning for your money. But you do have to be patient. So what I often say to people is, imagine you were going on holiday to Belgium, and what would you be doing before you leave? Well, you'd be going online, where are the best restaurants, the flea markets, you know, learning a bit of Flemish and all that. You do know, however, that once you got there and you were enjoying your holiday, there would be one or two moments where you actually said, I'm sorry, I haven't got a clue what's going on here. I just don't get it. But you would accept that while you're on a holiday, that's part of the fun. You just accept that being lost occasionally, being a bit confused, is part of it. And I would say, when you pick up the poetry book, imagine you're going on holiday to Belgium.
We're going to finish now with some poetry.
I suppose one of the poets that has meant most to me over my life, and certainly in my ministry, is R.S. Thomas, who died in 2000. He was not only a poet, but also a priest. And what I love about Thomas's work is a little bit like the comment of the great medieval mystic Meister Eckhart, who said, God is a little bit like a person who, whilst hiding in the dark, occasionally coughs and gives himself away. I think Thomas is the poet that explores both the darkness but also the coughs of the divine. And here in his poem Raptor, he explores, in typical Thomas fashion, a fresh image for God. You have made God small, setting him astride a pipette or a retort, studying the bubbles, absorbed in an experiment that will come to nothing. I think of him rather as an enormous owl abroad in the shadows, brushing me sometimes with his wing so the blood in my veins freezes. Able to find his way from one soul to another because he can see in the dark. I have heard him crooning to himself so that almost I could believe in angels, those feathered overtones in love's rafters. I have heard him scream too, fastening his talons in his great adversary, or in some lesser denizen maybe, like you or me.
That was a story worth sharing from the Church of England. Thanks for listening.